सहनाववतु सहनो भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा द्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः.
May the Supreme Lord protect both the teacher and the student, and may He cherish and nourish us both. May we work with full energy, may our study be perfect, and may it give us good results. May we never feel ill will towards others.
So welcome back to Tapasvini. She was asking me if she'd missed much. So I think we'll just look at very essential points from 11th chapter before we go on. The essential detail that we've learnt so far in terms of Abhideya, or the process of devotional service, is how to approach Krishna if we wanted to enter into loving relationship with Him. This we've been learning from Krishna's, from Arjuna's verses in this chapter. We've also been finding out about the incredible reciprocation that Krishna gives when we approach Him in the proper way. Like that. So the essential lesson is that we really can't go beyond the information, the knowledge given in the 11th chapter, unless we have a mood of dasya, or understanding, at least theoretically. I mean, it's difficult for us to realize it in our everyday life, but at least we have to theoretically accept, I am servant of the servant of the servant, of Sri Krishna. And then we can actually enter in to the information that Krishna will be giving us in these final chapters of Bhagavad Gita. Today's verses contain two of the crest jewels of Bhagavad Gita, verses 54 and 55. In fact, Srila Prabhupada says in his purport to verse 55 that that verse is the essence of Bhagavad Gita. It's an amazing verse. Without Prabhupada's purport, we could probably read through it, think it was very nice, and move on. But Prabhupada's purport makes it very, very clear that this is an essential verse for Abhideya, for the developing of proper understanding of the process of devotional service. And in these verses, the purpose to these two verses, Prabhupada gives us everything we need to know to re-establish ourselves in a loving service relationship with Krishna. When we read these purports very carefully, we can clearly understand with conviction that the purpose and final purport of this 11th chapter is that the two-armed form of Krishna is supreme and essential. This is another very strong point that comes through these verses, that although Krishna is showing His universal form and His four-armed form, both of them are manifesting from Him, not in any other way. So He is a supreme, essential form. Okay, so let's start today's verses by taking a look at verses 47 and 48. We'll read both of them. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, "My dear Arjuna, happily have I shown you, by my internal potency, the supreme universal form within the material world. No one before you has ever seen this primal form, unlimited and full of glaring effulgence. O best of the Kuru warriors, no one before you has ever seen this universal form of mine. For neither by studying the Vedas, nor by performing sacrifices, nor by charity, nor by pious activities, nor by severe penances, can I be seen in this form in the material world." So there are a number of interesting points we can understand from these two verses and Srila Prabhupada's purports on them. The first one that struck me is that Krishna has displayed the universal form. It's an emanation from Him, and it's subordinate to Him and dependent on Him. So just the fact that He is displaying it is an indication that He is the original form. It's a very simple point, but one that's a very strong point if we're talking anuman or logic, when we're talking about the universal form to people. Second point I was seeing was that Krishna is telling Arjuna that He has shown him this form by His internal potency. In other words, previously Arjuna's vision was covered by Krishna's yogamaya potency. Otherwise, how could Arjuna have been in that loving, intimate relationship with Krishna? So Krishna had to actually utilize His internal potency for Arjuna to be able to see this universal form. It was always there, but Arjuna didn't have the potency to see it because he was attracted to another ras. He was attracted to another relationship with Krishna. Srila Prabhupada tells us in his verse 47 purport that this universal form that Krishna manifested was a unique one, a very special showing for a very special friend. You see? So no one had ever seen it before. The form that was shown to Duryodhana was a partial manifestation. It was less effulgent and it didn't include the Kala Rupa aspect that this one does. So this information indicates very clearly how dear Arjuna is to Krishna and how very intimate and loving their friendship is. Krishna has really given his friend the best he has to offer. And that's the way between best friends. That's just the way it goes. So we can understand that there's an intimacy involved here. Krishna is doing what Arjuna wants to the best of his capacity. It's just the nature of friendship. In verse 48, Krishna gives a very strong hint that only pure devotion can conquer him and convince him to reveal himself. He's saying all these other things won't induce him to show his two-armed form. For some reason, I was thinking this in terms of Purushottam Vrata, that so many people are here in Vrindavan performing this Vrata, but their whole mentality is not to do it to see Krishna. Their whole mentality in doing it is for fruitive result. And if there's any sense of over-endeavor in doing these Vratas, anything that's independent from the desire to achieve pure devotional service, then they're not going to get the essential goal. They're not going to get Krishna's lotus feet and, you know, intimate association with him. I just found it fascinating because when he says here that, you know, neither by studying the Vedas, nor by performing sacrifices, nor by charity, nor by pious activities, nor by severe penances can I be seen in this form. So, you know, none of these things are going to work. So then we realize actually how fortunate we are that Prabhupada, in his mercy and his potency, has given us a very simple but very practical and result-giving formula for success. And although these other things are there and we can, you know, we may feel that there's something to be gained by doing them, they are the cherry on the cake. They're not the cake. Prabhupada has already given us the cake. I was just thinking of that when this point came to mind. Vishwanath Chakravarti also says something charming in his commentary on these verses. He indicates that actually these verses are Krishna joking with Arjuna, because Arjuna is saying to Krishna, I'm fearful now, you know, please be merciful to me and show me your two-armed form. So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, he has Krishna saying, Arjuna, you asked to see my universal form, so why are you now afraid and disturbed? You asked and I showed. So why are you now asking me to be kind and show you my personal form? In my kindness, I allowed you to see my universal form to fulfill your desire. So in this way, Krishna is joking with him. And he's playing with him also. But then he realizes that his friend, his very best friend, is actually disturbed. It's not, you know, it's a serious thing. He's actually disturbed. So then he stops playing with him. And he speaks verse 49. So let's have a look what he says there. You have been perturbed and bewildered by seeing this horrible feature of mine. Now let it be finished, my devotee. Be free again from all disturbances. With a peaceful mind, you can now see this form you desire. So Srila Prabhupada's purport on this verse clarifies many points of concern of interest here. So I'd like to read the whole thing. But before we do that, I'd just like to make one small comment in relation to this verse as spoken by Krishna. And that is, we can understand from this that if we have a sweet, loving service mood in relationship with him, that he will never give us anything beyond what we can handle. Isn't it? If we have the proper mood in approaching him, if we are properly situated in our relationship with him as Arjuna is, not to the same degree, of course, we're some ways from that, but still, if we're dealing with him in a proper mood, proper behavior, trying to please him, then as he says to Arjuna, he'll manifest the same mood to us. Okay, now, you know, you're disturbed, so let it be finished. Be free from all disturbances. You know, okay, you know, this is as much as you take, fine, I accept that. You know? And then he'll be a little bit, he'll show his Shamsunda form, his sweet side. So this is a very important point to remember, just in terms of the daily course of activities in our devotional life. The Krishna is not some monster that's trying to force us to become purified and surrender to him, but rather he'll push us, but he won't push us beyond what we can sanely handle. He's prepared to be human. So that's very nice. So I'd like to read this whole Purport of 49. Perhaps Tapasvini, you can come out and read the whole thing, just for a, I guess, a bit of your mercy for a change. Just the whole of 49, if you don't mind.
In the beginning of Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna was worried about killing Bhishma and Drona, his worshipful grandfather and master. But Krishna said that he need not be afraid of killing his grandfather. When the sons of Dhritarashtra tried to disrobe Draupadi in assembly of the Kurus, Bhishma and Drona were silent. If for such negligence of duty, they should be killed. Krishna showed his universal form to Arjuna just to show him that these people were already killed for their unlawful action. That scene was shown to Arjuna because devotees are always peaceful and they cannot perform such horrible actions. The purpose of the revelation of the universal form was shown. Now Arjuna wanted to see the forearm form, and Krishna showed him. A devotee is not much interested in the universal form, for it does not enable one to reciprocate loving feelings. Either a devotee wants to offer his respectful, worshipful feelings, or he wants to see the two-handed Krishna form so that he can reciprocate in loving service with the Supreme Personality of Godhead.
Prabhupada is making two very interesting points here. One is that Krishna had a very subtle but important reason in agreeing to show Arjuna's universal form. It was an act of kindness. The devotee is by nature very soft-hearted and doesn't want to be involved in violence, especially when family, etc. is concerned. But by giving Arjuna a preview of what was going to happen, it sort of like helped him a little bit to be able to come to terms with it and eventually be able to deal with it and do it. The other thing that's very interesting is that Prabhupada is explaining why the pure devotee is not interested in seeing the universal form. In a previous purport, Prabhupada said that he's not interested in a godless display of opulences. He's not interested in seeing the opulences without the personality to whom they belong. But here Prabhupada is going a little bit deeper, and he's explaining, because there's no relationship, there's no possibility of relationship with the universal form, so the pure devotee has no interest. If it's a four-handed form, he can serve him in a mood of awe and reverence in dasya, and he's satisfied. Or if it's two-armed form, where sweet, loving relationships are there. So where there's a sense of relationship, then the devotee is happy. But if there's no sense of relationship, no possibility of relationship, then he's not at all interested. So I found this a very nice highlight that Prabhupada is making here. Verse 50 is spoken by Sanjay to Dhritarashtra. He's telling him and us that Krishna then showed his forearmed form and finally his true armed form. Srila Prabhupada's purport on this verse also highlights Krishna's compliance with Arjuna's desires and the fact that that was an act of love. I wanted to read this whole purport also because Prabhupada has a unique way of explaining things so that we can clearly understand them. We'll read the verse and the purport. Sanjaya said to Dhritarashtra, "The Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna, having spoken thus to Arjuna, displayed his real four-armed form and at last showed his two-armed form, thus encouraging the fearful Arjuna." Then the Bhaktivedanta Purport, "When Krishna appeared as the son of Vasudeva and Devaki, he first of all appeared as a four-armed Narayan. But when he was requested by his parents, he transformed himself into an ordinary child in appearance. Similarly, Krishna knew that Arjuna was not interested in seeing a four-handed form. But since Arjuna asked to see this four-handed form, Krishna also showed him this form again, and then showed himself in his two-handed form." The word Somya Vapu is very significant. Somya Vapu
is a very beautiful form. It is known as the most beautiful form. Actually, Somya means as cooling as moonlight. So just as the moonlight is very soothing, not only beautiful, but very soothing, this is the nature of Krishna's Somya Vapu, this form. When he was present, everyone was attracted simply by Krishna's form. And because Krishna is the director of the universe, he just banished the fear of Arjuna, his devotee, and showed him again his beautiful form of Krishna. In the Brahma Samhita 5:38, it is stated, Premanjana Charita Bhakti Velochanena. Only a person whose eyes are smeared with the ointment of love can see the beautiful form of Sri Krishna. In verses 51 and 52, a very happy Arjuna thanks Krishna for showing him his true form, and Krishna reminds Arjuna that such a darshan is very, very rare, even amongst the demigods. So this is actually Krishna's introductory statement to verse 53. So let's have a look at the three verses together, 51, 52, and 53. When Arjuna thus saw Krishna in his universal form, he said, O Janardhan, seeing this human-like form so very beautiful, I am now composed in mind, and I am restored to my original nature. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, My dear Arjuna, this form of mine you are now seeing is very difficult to behold. Even the demigods are ever seeking the opportunity to see this form, which is so dear. Then in 53 he says, The form you are seeing with your transcendental eyes cannot be understood simply by studying the Vedas, nor by undergoing serious penances, nor by charity, nor by worship. It is not by these means that one can see me as I am. So this is very similar to the verse we've heard just a few minutes ago. Huh? He's explaining how he cannot be attained. These things will not be useful in attaining him. He's telling us, in fact, that the paths that we have studied in the first six chapters of Bhagavad Gita aren't the ones that are going to lead to him. This is like a verse in preparation, not only for verse 54 and 55, which are the heart of the Gita in one sense, but it's also an introduction to 1865, 66, in the sense that only by surrender to him in love can we attain him, not by these other means. So then we want to know, okay, in this verse, in verse 53, he's telling us how we cannot attain Krishna in Ishamshunda form. So the obvious question that we'll have if we're sincere and serious devotees is, okay, how do we attain him? We've told us how not to attain him, so how do we do it? So that's what Krishna's going to tell us in verses 54 and 55. Actually, 55 is one of the most confidential verses in Bhagavad Gita. And if I had the time, I could very much relish giving a week of classes just on this one verse. It's an amazing verse with very serious and deep implications. But we're going to somehow have to try and deal with it today. So let's have a look. We'll read these two verses, 54 and 55. My dear Arjuna, only by undivided devotional service can I be understood as I am standing before you, and can thus be seen directly. Only in this way can you enter into the mysteries of my understanding. So this word undivided, ananya, it comes from the word ananya in Sanskrit. That was first mentioned in 8.14, where Krishna, actually in 8.14, Krishna is first mentioning pure devotional service, or ananya bhakti. And this is an essential quality of it, that is undivided. The mind is fully fixed on Krishna, fully focused. There's no diversions. The heart is pure. Unless we have a pure heart, this focus, this determination, won't be spontaneous. We may be able to do it as an artificial imposition on the mind, but to really do it, we have to be very clean-hearted. So how to become clean-hearted, Krishna will explain in verse 55. My dear Arjuna, he who engages in my pure devotional service, free from the contaminations of fruitive activities and mental speculation, he who works for me, who makes me the supreme goal of his life, and who is friendly to every living being, he certainly comes to me. So here in this verse, Krishna is very explicitly and practically explaining exactly what Ananya Bhakti or pure devotional service is. This verse is very, very similar. In fact, this verse is a seed verse of a key verse of Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu by Rupa Goswami, the verse which describes pure devotional service. It's given in 1.1.11 of Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. Anyabhilasata sunyam jnana kamari anavritam anukulyena krishnanu silanam bhakti uttama. When first-class devotional service develops, one must be devoid of all material desires, knowledge obtained by monistic philosophy, and fruit of action. The devotee must constantly serve Krishna favorably, as Krishna desires. So this here we have Krishnanu Shilanam. So here Prabhupada has translated it as constantly serving Krishna favorably. But if you look at the words of the Sanskrit, Anushilanam, this actually means we have to be following strictly in parampara. There has to be that siksha link of parampara. So that is a very interesting indication of what truly favorable devotional service is, that we are following the teachings of our founder Acharya and the previous Acharyas. So this verse is a success formula given by Krishna himself. So if we're very interested in attaining pure devotional service in this lifetime, we'll be very, very interested in what this verse contains. So I want to take a closer look at it. Here Krishna is giving 5 points to his success formula. And Prabhupada very, very clearly explains the nature of each of these in his purport. So we'll read a little bit of the purport just to set the proper perspective. Just from the beginning of it. Anyone who wants to approach, to show you how seriously Prabhupada takes this verse, that's the main reason I want to read this section. Anyone who wants to approach the supreme of all the personalities of Godhead on the Krishna Loka planet and the spiritual sky and be intimately connected with the supreme personality of Krishna must take this formula as stated by the supreme himself. Therefore, this verse is considered to be the essence of Bhagavad Gita. The Bhagavad Gita is a book directed to the conditioned souls who are engaged in the material world with the purpose of lording it over nature and who do not know of the real spiritual life. The Bhagavad Gita is meant to show how one can understand his spiritual existence and his eternal relationship with the Supreme Spiritual Personality and to teach one how to go back home, back to Godhead. Now here in the verse which clearly explains the process by which one can attain success in its spiritual activity, devotional service. So in a nutshell, what Krishna is giving us here is the essence of Abhideya. If we can somehow or other incorporate what he's saying here in our life, then our life will be successful. We'll attain his darshan, enter into loving relationship with him, and go back home. So let's have a look at the 5 aspects of this 5-point success formula. The clues are given in the Sanskrit. So we have mad bhakta. So here we're talking bhakti must be performed purely. That is, there should be no other engagement. So we'll read what Prabhupada has to say about this in his purport. It's on the second page. In the paragraph above the paragraph, quoting Ananya Balasata Sunyam, verse from Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, in the middle of that purport. As indicated by the word mad bhakta, he fully engages in devotional service, specifically in the 9 processes of devotional engagement: hearing, chanting, remembering, worshipping, serving the lotus feet of the Lord, offering prayers, carrying out the orders of the Lord, making friends with him, and surrendering everything to him. One can engage in all 9 devotional processes, or 8 or 7, or at least 1, and that will surely make one perfect. So it's important to remember at this time that these 9 processes of devotional service expand into the 64 angas that are given in the Nectar of Devotion. So, and Bhakti Rupa Goswami, he explains in his purport, Prabhupada actually is quoting him, in his purport on these 64 angas, that they are meant to fully engage every aspect of our mental, physical, and intellectual existence. They're supposed to fully engage us in our conditioned nature. So we can understand from this point of Mad Bhakta that we should be engaged in nothing else but these activities. If we can take those 64 angas of nectar of devotion and these 9 processes given by Krishna and check how we're living our lives. Are we always taking prasad? Are we engaged in our activities physically? Our physical activity is always connected with devotional service. Our mental activity is always connected with devotional service. If they're not, how can we make them so? There's so many beautiful ways to engage the mind that are given in those 64 angas. Meditation on the deity, offering of prayers, reciting of, very wonderful prayers by the acharyas. So many gifts are there in the form of those 64 angas. So Prabhupada is elaborating on this first point of the 5-point success formula, this Mad Bhakta. The second point is in the verse we have Sangha Vajittaha. So what we're meaning here is bhakti must be free from the contamination of karma and jnana. And we should not be associating with people who are contaminated in this way. This is a tough one, but this is very essential to be very strict in our association. Anyone who is contaminated by karma or jnana, it will have an effect on us. So it's not enough to be trying to free ourselves from this tendency, but we shouldn't be associating with those who are contaminated by it. So Prabhupada, what he says about this is on the same paragraph as the Anya Bilasata Sunyam verse is quoted, right at the beginning of the paragraph. He says, the term Sangha Bhajitaha is very significant. One should disassociate himself from persons who are against Krishna. Not only are the atheistic persons against Krishna, but so also are those who are attractive to fruitive activities and mental speculation. So this is a very subtle point. In essence, what Prabhupada is saying here is that anyone else who has another agenda besides Krishna's agenda is against Krishna. It's subtle, but it's a very strong point. So it's not enough that we avoid the demoniac or the envious, but also those who are attracted. He's not even saying attached, but he's saying attracted to fruitive activities and mental speculation. That's especially important for us as neophytes in the devotional process because mental speculation and fruitive activities at our level can be a source of fall down. We can start to think, well, maybe Prabhupada meant that rather than what he's writing in his book. Or, you know, so many things can happen when you start to associate with mental speculators. So we have to be very, very careful in our association. The third point of this 5-point plan is in the words, where are we here? Mat kama krin, or mat kama krit. Bhakti must be performed in relationship with Krishna for his pleasure. All of these points are very subtle points. We could, of course, take them externally, but if we do that, we may miss the boat. We really have to look at the subtleties involved. So here, we'll read what Prabhupada says. He starts actually his purport on these 5 points by talking first about this point. Prabhupada was always very, very practical in what he did. So he starts in the second paragraph, just before he quotes the verse from Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu 2:55. As far as work is concerned, one should transfer his energy entirely to Krishna conscious activities. Have you found it? Okay, so have a look at the second paragraph of the purport. Okay, you found it now? Second para. Okay. As far as work, Bettany, you found it? No? Go down a little further. It's just 2 lines above the quotation of the verse. Okay. As far as work is concerned, one should transfer his energy entirely to Krishna conscious activities. As stated in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu 2.255,
Anyasaktasya visayan yathaham upayanjataha nibandha krishna sambandhe yuktam vairagyam uchite.
I'd like to read the translation of that also, because it's an important verse. Things should be accepted for the Lord's service and not for one's personal sense gratification. If one accepts something without attachment and accepts it because it's related to Krishna, one's renunciation is called Yukta Vairagya. So it's an interesting translation that Prabhupada has given there in Nectar of Devotion.
Here Prabhupada is saying, no work should be done by any man except in relationship to Krishna. This is called Krishna Karma. One may be engaged in various activities, but one should not be attached to the result of his work. The result should be done only for him.
So Prabhupada is making here the points very clearly that if we want to actually be engaged successfully in Krishna consciousness, actually practicing Krishna karma, there are two essential features. One is that the work we're doing has some relationship with Krishna. Usually this will be a relationship of, like, we have some conscious understanding of what the relationship is. Externally it may not look like it, but we have an understanding, a conscious understanding of its relationship with Krishna and Krishna consciousness. And the other essential point is that we're not attached to the result. The result should only be done for Krishna. We do the service, how he uses that service, the result that comes, is purely up to him. We may pick flowers for him, intending that they be used in one way. The deities may decide to use them in another way. If we don't like that, we're attached to the result. Our business is only to be in, to do the service for his pleasure, not to be attached to the result of the service. These are very subtle points, but they're obviously very important ones. The next one is a very, very beautiful statement. It's in the first line of the verse, Mat Paramaha. Krishna must be the supreme goal of our life. The third one we're talking, that was taken from the first three, or the first word of the verse, Mat Kama Krit, which basically means that it must be performed in relationship with Krishna for his pleasure, not for ours. And then the fourth one, Mat Parama, this is also in the first line of the verse. Here, we have to be consciously accepting Krishna as the supreme goal of our life. We have to be focused and not think that other things are more important than Krishna. It's in the first line, Mat Parama. Yeah. In the word for word, Prabhupada says, considering me supreme. But in terms of the purport Prabhupada gives, which we'll read now, we were accepting Krishna as a goal of our life. So here we're looking at the, fourth paragraph of this rather long purport by Prabhupada. Let's make sure you've all found it first. It starts with the word Mat Parama. The word Mat Parama refers. Has everyone found that? Yeah? Okay. The word Mat Parama refers to one who considers the association of Krishna in his supreme abode to be the highest perfection of life. Such a person does not wish to be elevated to the higher planets, such as the moon or sun or heavenly planets, or even the highest planet of this universe, Brahmaloka. He has no attraction for that. He is only attracted to being transferred to the spiritual sky. So we can see with all of these points that really what we're talking about is a refinement and a focusing of consciousness. We're talking about the madhyam. This verse is actually for the madhyam, the one who's really wanting to become serious and cross over the turbulent ocean of anatta nivritti. He wants to get to nistha. So all of these points that Krishna and Prabhupada are making here are very much stressing the need to be focused and to be very conscious about how you're performing a devotional service. Not just that I'm performing my devotional service, therefore it's good. No, there may be anattas within the service and our mentality towards the service that are creating difficulty in our devotional life and causing a disturbance to our mind and our relationship with the devotees. So all of this we have to keep in mind when we're looking at this five-point success formula.
The last point of the formula that Krishna is giving here, it comes in the Sanskrit in the third line, the first word, Nirvairaha. So the devotee must be friendly to all. So this is often misunderstood. Prabhupada very much is in favor of clarifying it for our benefit. And he does that in the paragraph after the verse where the Anya Vilasata Sunyam verse is quoted in Sanskrit. It begins, "A devotee of Krishna is friendly to everyone." Have you found that one? Yeah? Okay. "A devotee of Krishna is friendly to everyone. Therefore it is said here that he has no enemy. How is this? A devotee situated in Krishna consciousness knows that only devotional service to Krishna can relieve a person from all the problems of life. He has personal experience of this, and therefore he wants to introduce this system, Krishna consciousness, in the human society." So here Prabhupada is talking about a particular kind of preacher, a particular kind of counselor. He's talking about one who has faith only in the Shastra and its application. He's not talking one that is like accommodating everything else and calling it Krishna consciousness, but rather someone who is very fixed in the understanding that all the answers are in Bhagavad Gita. All the answers are in Bhagavatam. I don't need to go outside of this reference. So then Prabhupada is explaining that what Krishna is meaning here by friendship is one who is able to help others understand the root cause of their problem. Huh? Understand that ignorance is a root cause of the problem and the cause of their suffering. And he in his mercy, his compassion, because others have shown compassion and mercy to him, he wants to extend that chain and share what he has to offer with others. So it's a very, very nice understanding of what friendship really is. Amongst devotees, friendship means talking Krishna Katha, serving Krishna together, taking prasad together, all devotional activities. Not talking about lotus issues in ISKCON. This is not association with devotees, it's association with the modes. So, we have to, basically what Krishna is saying here is have a look at how you're doing things in light of this 5-point program and see how you can improve. If you want to come to the Majjham platform, Majjham means we're serious. We want to become focused. We can feel the pain and the anxiety that comes and the disturbance in our minds and our relationships that comes by not being focused on Krishna. When there's diversions, it shows in so many strange ways. And like the mind becomes our worst enemy in that circumstance. So Krishna here is giving us a formula by which we can overcome this difficulty. And if we can, somehow or other, by his mercy and Prabhupada's mercy, mercy of the Vaishnavas, we can apply these 5 points in our daily devotional lives, then Krishna is guaranteeing complete spiritual success. So it's worth trying for, isn't it? I personally feel it's worth trying for. So it's worth a try. So any questions from what we've said in class? Any of the points we've made in class this morning? Okay. Any questions on the reading? We didn't cover everything that was in Prabhupada's purport for lack of time. So if you have any questions on the purports that you read last night. Yeah. You always have to, with Prabhupada and his purports, you always have to see it within the context of the message he's trying to get across. Like that point with the difficulty I have with Gabadaksai Vishnu lying in the lower regions. It's because I was thinking of it in terms of a Bhagavatam purport, and it didn't line up. But as soon as I saw it fresh, like a child, within its own context, then I can understand what Prabhupada was saying. So when he's saying no one can see it, what he's really saying is no one who's not in disciplic succession can see it. And then when he's talking about the expansive nature of the form, then he's saying the demigods can also see it. But what he's meaning is that those demigods are in disciplic succession. And in the 47, then he's getting more in the mood of, if you're seriously wanting to understand a little bit more about me, then understand that it's not by any of these other processes that you're going to be able to see me. You have to come to the point of actually loving me, serving me. Yeah, you could see it like that.
But generally, I mean, other devotees might like to comment, but my personal experience is that Prabhupada will say things to highlight what he's trying to say in that particular section, to make it strong for you. And a lot of scholars have difficulty with this, because what Prabhupada is trying to do, he's trying to help us understand the siddhanta of what's being said, or the highlight of what's being said. Right, and he'll take poetic justice at times to do that. So if you understand Prabhupada's mood, you don't have trouble with that. But if you try and understand intellectually, as the scholars do, then you'll have a lot of trouble. It just goes with understanding Prabhupada's mood, when we're talking about mood and mission. So Prabhupada has a certain way of dealing with Krishna's books, you know. And, you know, like, quite often, even in Gita, the Prem Bhakti of Prabhupada comes through. And you think, what's he talking about, you know? And then you have to see it in light of, as a Prema Bhakta speaking, he's talking from the Uttama platform. That's why I can't understand why he's saying it this way. But then, you know, then you can understand. Then immediately he usually comes down and puts it within the preacher perspective. You get these glimpses of Braj, you get these glimpses of, you know, Krishna's nature and all these sorts of things, and all of a sudden Prabhupada brings it down, you know. So we just have to accept that Prabhupada's a transcendental personality, and by his mercy he's allowing us a glimpse of who he is and what he is, but there's far beyond what we can see of Prabhupada to be seen and to be understood. He's, you know, a Nityasiddha. So sometimes, you know, but this is a very, you're raising this point as an important one, because we should at this point check ourselves and remind ourselves that we're wanting to understand Gita with the soul, not with the intelligence. Otherwise, we may find ourselves in a number of years, if we allow that subtlety of misunderstanding to develop into a misgiving and a serious doubt, then in time it may create a serious disturbance in our devotional life. But at the very beginning, we can just say, well, my intelligence has a hard time with this one, but I love Prabhupada and trust him, so with my heart I follow it. Then we're safe. But that means a leap of faith. Does that make sense? So that's why it's so very important when we walk into the room that we leave the subtle body at the door, in one sense. You know, when we come to class, we come as devotees to hear. Otherwise we may have some difficulty. Of course it's very important that the intelligence is satisfied and all that kind of thing. But in the end result, Krishna and his energies are inconceivable. We're not going to be able to understand them with our intelligence. We're only going to be able to understand them by having firm faith in what Prabhupada says and entering through Prabhupada's words into them. We have to understand that Prabhupada's words are chit shakti, and they are doors. They are doors into the spiritual world. One word of Prabhupada is good enough to take you back to Godhead if you understand this. That these words of Prabhupada are doors into the spiritual world. Not windows, doors. You can walk through them into the spiritual world. Okay. So let's have a quick review. Why is Krishna's two-arm form considered by him to be the most confidential form? That's a good point. It's not easy to see it. What do you have to have to see it? Huh? You have to have ananya bhakti. Pure, unalloyed devotional service. So that's why it's the most confidential. You can't approach this form through knowledge, even through service, only through pure devotional consciousness, which will manifest as pure devotional service. So, you know, like a, that's why it's considered. Ma- That's why I said to you with the exam papers, to write it as if you were preaching. Because if you answer the questions as if everybody knows, you may miss out some points. Like forget that the soul is an essential part of explaining transmigration. Mm-hmm. So you have to, like, if you think in terms of you're talking to somebody about Krishna who doesn't know, then you can explain it more clearly. There's no problem. And why is a pure devotee not much interested in this universal form? Yeah. The pure devotee is wanting relationship with Krishna. The essence of everything for him is his relationship with Krishna. You know, this is very clear in many, many pastimes of Braj.
that, you know, the most ridiculous things can be happening externally, but the essential point is a relationship, you know. Like, you know, Krishna's madly in love with Radharani and he's trying to milk a bull, you know. I mean, externally, people would think that's, you know, what's happening here? But the thing is that there's that intensity of love, a relationship between them that drives him to that point of insanity where he's trying to milk a bull. So, yeah. And what is the five-point success formula that Krishna gives for attaining him in verse 55? Can anyone remember those 5 points? Or one, let's take them one by one. Who can give me 1 point from this five-point plan? Yeah. Yeah. Engaging fully in Krishna consciousness. Yeah. Another one? Yeah, very good. Free from jnana and karma contamination and those who are contaminated in that way. Yeah? Yeah, it should be Krishna karma. It should be, any work we do should be in relationship with Krishna and for his pleasure, not our pleasure. Of course we will get pleasure, but that because that's natural. If Krishna is pleased with us, we'll be pleased. We'll be satisfied. But it's not our goal to be pleased. Fourth one? Yeah, very important point. We should see Krishna as the goal, supreme goal of our lives. And the last one? Friendship. Yeah. We should have a mood of friendship with everyone. That doesn't mean New Age friendship. You know, I scratch your back, you scratch mine. Not like that. We're talking here more in a mood of we know what will give happiness. By the mercy of Prabhupada and his devotees, we know what will give happiness and we want to share it with others. It's more in that mood. It may be as a preacher, maybe as a friend, maybe as a counselor, maybe so many roles. But it will show in little ways also, like if someone approaches us for association, we'll, you know, try and make it Krishna conscious. Isn't it? Rather than be dragged into talking issues or latest politics in ISKCON or this one, that one. You know, we'll try, if we can't avoid it, we'll try and turn it into a more favorable discussion. Okay. So what I'd like to do now is hear from our speakers. First of all, we have Yashoda Mai, and then Tusti will speak, and then we'll go into some workshop activity on these 5 points of the verse.
This section of the Bhagavad Gita, 1147 to 1155, I felt was a very powerful section in that it is the result of a conclusive build-up of explanation to the point of bringing the reader to understanding Krishna's absolute and pure and sweet form. The first six chapters introduced us through the different processes of karma, jnana, buddhi, yoga, and then when we approach the middle section, Krishna then begins in chapter 7 explaining how he is the source of everything, and he confirms it again in chapter 9, saying, I'm not only the source of everything, but I'm simultaneously aloof. But now was he, and in chapter 10 he starts explaining his opulences, but actually in chapter 11 he's now establishing for Arjuna and for the world the truth. He's proving it by his displays, not only of the universal form, but of the four-armed form, and then ultimately his two-armed form. And I really did feel by the length of the purports in these verses that they were not just ordinary verses. In fact, when I got this assignment, I thought, oh, 8 verses, I'll have time to do other things. And then when I saw the length of the purports, I spent the whole night just trying to go through them because I could see Prabhupada devoted a lot of energy to them. And he does conclude sweetly and brilliantly that the two-armed form is ultimate. It is ultimate but because of its sweetness and its beauty, not because of its opulence and its grandeur. I thought that was just sort of an overview of this section in light of what we've been doing, and it has brought us up to this stage. I wanted to make a comment, too. I just, as I heard Mataji talk about Prabhupada being the doorway, I wanted to share a little pastime. It just came to mind. There was a time when Mataji and I were going to Radha Damodar Temple. I think it was for Chandan Yatra. And the crowds do that usual what shall I say, meeting of two forces. The crowds were coming out and the crowds were going in, and no one was moving either way. No one could go out, no one could get in. And we stood there just wondering if we were going to get in to see the deity. And then some little Gurukula boy came from the side and, you know, waved his arms, so we followed, and the pujari for Prabhupada had opened the back door. So we went in and we quietly sat inside, and the people were still stuck in the doorway, and we sat quietly inside and we took darshan of Prabhupada. It was the time of day we chanted our Gayatri. And then the other Malika, she commented, she said, "See, Prabhupada freed us of all the trouble and he took us right to the top." I just thought it was just a complete indication. So.
I thought it was the back door.
He says that. He's also said that, and he's also said that in tapes. He says, "I have the key to the back door." Okay. I also wanted to share a few realizations too in approaching study, when we have to speak about it, as opposed to when we come and we can be a little more passive. I find that when we have to share something, we read with a lot more care and with a lot more attention, mostly because we want to see if there's some light we can shed on something that perhaps others might not have seen, or perhaps the teacher might not have had time to point out. So I just found that entering these lines through the mood of sharing brings, for me, even though I don't always have the time, it definitely brings the shastras to light. And I was remembering too something Mataji said about how when you enter into these lines of shastra, how Krishna actually enters into the lines of your intelligence, and one can actually experience that happening. You can see how he's formulating our thinking as he purifies it. It's a little bit like the swan going into the stem of the lotus flower. I also wanted to share another realization I had when I saw the length of the purports. It wasn't in a mood of, oh dear, you know. I guess I just felt a tremendous amount of appreciation for Prabhupada's potency, his genius, his capabilities. I was thinking how we had worked so hard a week ago writing. It seemed to me, at least, to be quite a yajna, writing for a long time and coming up with a paragraph. It seemed like a big endeavor. And I was remembering how, I think Prabhupada's Gita was lost, wasn't it? It was stolen, and he had to do it again. And I was thinking, what would happen if Srimati Mataji came in one day and said to all of us, "I lost your booklets, take the test again." I thought I had just sort of expended every drop of intelligence and energy I had. And then, but if I would have to take that and compress it into type, it probably wouldn't have filled two pages of the Gita. And I could see how Prabhupada, he could go on and he could go on and he could on, and he did that every day, and he did it in 10 years' time. I guess I just was appreciative of his inconceivable capacity. That was a realization I had about him. And in relationship to we're struggling and we're trying, just even after, for me, 22 years of being in the movement, just now finding time to study seriously what he wrote, produced, and distributed in 10 years. It's just mind-boggling, inconceivable. So just a little light on what he's done. Now to try to cover some points in the verses that perhaps maybe might not have been so apparent to others, or Mataji might not have time for. In 1147, I was struck very much by something Prabhupada said. He said in the purport, he said, "Because of Arjuna, others were able to see." Now, if you recall in that purport, the demigods and Sanjaya were able to share the vision. Others were not. And actually in another purport, I think in two more purports, Prabhupada said, because Krishna has shown his universal form, he has used this incident to reveal his form, others can have some idea of it. So as I reflected on this, I came to the conclusion of the critical position of the pure devotee in this material world. He is actually the complete link. Krishna shows his form to Arjuna because of Arjuna's friendship, his devotional sentiment. Sanjaya probably could have asked, and he would not have received that benediction. The demigods might have asked, they would not have received the benediction. All of us who read about it could have asked, and we would not have received the benediction. It just really struck me that the Gita was spoken through Arjuna. The form was shown through Arjuna. How Krishna completely uses the, you know, he's in the spiritual world, and the material world is where the conditioned souls are. And that pure devotee is the bridge. He is completely the link. Not only is he the link in that he reveals Krishna to us, but Krishna reveals himself through us. It just, that really struck me. It seemed like a very important point to me. And that, yes, it had come up in 1148. He says, now, Prabhupada says, now one can have some idea. So this is in our own small way. We can appreciate Krishna through the via medium of this pure devotee. And that same verse, 1148, I was appreciative of Prabhupada's, again, his artistry when he explains something. He so often uses poetic chains of expression, or what we would call perhaps development. He'll either develop something up, or he may develop an idea down. And in this case, he was trying to explain what divine vision meant. And as he did it, he said, well, divine vision means you have to be divine. And then he goes on to say, well, what does divine mean? And he said, well, divine means godly. And then he goes on to say, well, what does godly mean? So he leads us into understanding. Godly means demigod. And what is a demigod? Well, a demigod worships Vishnu. And then, well, what's the ultimate in worship of Vishnu? And then he says, the pure devotee. So I have to appreciate not only his genius, but his poetry, however he explains. And then he did a reverse one when he was talking about the limbs of bhakti. He said, well, you can practice 9. Or 8, or 7, or 1. He just, either way, he can take you up or he can bring you down to the level you can appreciate. Let's see, preliminary. In that same verse, 48, I liked again, he used a little bit of alliteration in glorifying Bhagavad Gita. He was stressing the importance of Bhagavad Gita in our understanding of Krishna. And he says, it's preliminary, but it's perfect. I thought that was sweet. Preliminary, but perfect. Because the book is perfect, even though it is preliminary, it can provide everything. It's a nice alliteration and a nice balance of understanding there. And then I wanted to share with you, too, some personal realization I had, how in the verses, how Krishna deals with his devotee, and how perhaps some of you have maybe experienced he deals with us in the same way. As we saw here, he was being actually very sweet to Arjuna in these verses. He has shown Arjuna the form Arjuna wished to see. Arjuna became first bewildered and then fearful. And then after Krishna understood Arjuna was fearful, he says, I kindly showed this to you, but now be peaceful, no more fear, and have peace of mind. So I know in my own lifetime I've seen when Krishna wants to make a point of something I should do or shouldn't do, often he will put me in a period of intense distress. It'll be just so intense, I just don't think I can handle one thing more. But then finally, when I've gotten the message of what he wanted to convey, once the message was clear to me, he will give you just such a flood of mercy. It'll be so sweet afterwards. I've seen he's a good director of drama. He knows how to build suspense, and he knows at the end how to soften the experience, as he did for Arjuna. I also could see, too, that whatever we wish, the Lord is listening from inside, and he will fulfill it. We do have to be careful what we desire. Arjuna did ask to see that form, and then he also asked to see the forearm form. And I remember over 25 years ago, I started to become a little bit thoughtful. I started to wonder what the universe was really like. And I just, in my mind, I thought, what is the universe really like? And I remember I had not such a grand vision as Arjuna did, but within 1 month, Krishna gave me and I wasn't even very pious. I mean, he gave me direct realization in about a 3-day period. that it was a cosmic dream, that past, present, and future was going on right in front of me, that every aspect of my environment was perfectly orchestrated by some superior intelligence. I mean, it was so much that just like Arjun, I practically did lose my mind. So I just wanted to share with us how our prayers do get fulfilled, and sometimes we have to be careful about the magnitude of them. That was a sort of an application. For others' benefit, yes.
Even though it would cause him distress.
Right.
For others' benefit, he was prepared
to do that. My platform wasn't so evolved at that point. But just that I do feel Krishna does fulfill our desires, and we sometimes have to, you know, be aware of how that's happening. I liked something Srila Prabhupada said in 1152. I felt it was applicable for terms of preaching and also for our own application. He's telling us in other verses, as is Krishna, that by repeated hearing we will get a full understanding of Krishna. But now the mood has shifted, and he's saying now, 1152, he says, by repeated hearing, Krishna becomes dear. So I felt now this essence of sweetness is developing in the verses and in Prabhupada's purports more and more. And because sweetness and beauty is considered to be the topmost features of the Lord in his supreme form, that I also felt personally that these were the features that for those of us who want to aspire for that, we needed to look for and develop, not be attracted to opulence or power, but actually avoid those things and look instead for the mood of sweetness and understanding, compassion, friendship. I wanted also to share some realization I had about Srila Prabhupada's mercy. He goes to great lengths in describing Shyam Sundar, the form of the Lord. In this material world, for the jiva whose condition he does not have the opportunity to see Krishna directly. And our acharyas explained that the holy name and the Sri Vigraha are the two means by which we can see Krishna. That's all we have. So we have to be very grateful for what Srila Prabhupada has done. He's not only given us books, but he's given deities throughout the world, places where people never knew of Krishna. And he's established worship of the deity and how we can actually understand who is Krishna. I once went to a temple on Parikram with Dina Bandhu one time, and it was a Vallabha temple. And we waited all day for a 15-minute darshan, and the deity was this big, and it was like three chambers back, and everybody was crowded on the side to try to take darshan, and it was almost impossible to do it. Or if I think of Balaji in South India, people will wait 12 hours for 2 minutes to see this deity. And how Prabhupada has been given us so much spiritual opulence. You know, we have beautiful deities, you know, extensive darshans. He's done everything to help us see Krishna. And I remember even when he was instructing the painters to paint Krishna, he said he's a person. He didn't like the Rajasthani style, which showed him in a stylized way. He says he's a person. Make him look like one. I could just feel how, as he concluded in that final purport describing the beautiful form of Shyamasundar, how he's, you know, we have Radhe Shyam here in Vrindavan. It's so, these deities are glorious. And Prabhupada would even go to the trouble, I know Jamuna told me, because she had these deities. She was sent to make sure they were perfectly done. Prabhupada even struck the pose that Radharani, she said, was supposed to have. He says, I want her to look like this. And he says, if she's not dancing, the whole show's finished. So, and let's see what other point I thought was very sweet. He stresses too the importance of risk, and this was one thing I don't do in my spiritual life. He emphasizes that the devotee who takes a risk by being friendly to others to spread the mission is dearmost to him, and I'm always trying to make my life safe and comfortable, and I'm just praying somehow or other. I don't know how I can ever overcome that. Obviously, I'm not his confidential servant, but I did appreciate that factor of risk. Sorry I took so long. There were so many points and a lot of purport.
Yeah, this is really not easy test, because so many essential words and purport And Yashoda said also, I was writing so many pages, but then I understood I can't, you know, read it. So I try like classify something according to our purpose and make this like this short. Therefore, yes, I even start from like mood and mission Srila Prabhupada. I see that like one of my mission of Srila Prabhupada was to establish actually that Krishna is Supreme Personality of God and he is beautiful to arms in this Krishna is the Supreme Personality of God and he is not ordinary human beings. Like sometimes foolish people can think about him and can derive to him. And he speak about this in verse 48, 51, 52. And he used this universal form of Krishna as proof that no one can show such form from ordinary. It is not possible for ordinary human beings to show universal form of Krishna. And this is possible only for omnipotent Lord. In verse 52, he elaborates more how mundane materialistic people and jnani can come to this conclusion that Krishna is just like ordinary person or he is impersonal. Therefore, he has very good explanation. You can see Krishna like historical personality or see him like impersonal feature or something like that. And in verse 54, he gives so many quotation and reference from different shastra. He confirms that original form of Krishna is two-armed, human-like form, and everything emanates from him. And we can use also this for preaching as well, to show people that actually this most beautiful, most wonderful two-armed human being form Krishna, it is real supreme God. This is real truth, this absolute truth. But this is not something like people thinking human being. And Mood Srila Prabhupada also in this, that not only said, this is my opinion. This is, I am thinking like this. But he confirmed this by many, many references from Shastra. Therefore, this become very authoritative. And next for this, also his mission was to defeat impersonalism. And so I think, because if we establish that Krishna is really supreme absolute truth, then all other purpose will be like automatically served. Then there is no room for this concoction for impersonalism, because this already established. And Srila Prabhupada, like verse 48, 51, 52, he again and again speak about this. He always repeat same like themes, that Krishna is supreme, he is not a human being, and he is not impersonal Brahman. And by this repetition, he wants really establish very solidly this truth about Krishna. And also he wants establish like authority of Bhagavad Gita as one of more essential part of Vedic wisdom. In verse 51, 54, he said that Bhagavad Gita not require any commentary of the foolish commentators, whatever they can be, great scholar or so-called pseudo-spiritualist. He said that all mundane scholars and such commentators just simply waste their time to try to concord all other these things. And this is also like mission of Srila Prabhupada, also his mood. And he always stressed this very important point, if some want to see God or make commentary for Bhagavad Gita or claim that he can show the universal form, first of all, he should become pure devotee of Krishna. Because it is impossible to understand Krishna by mundane education, by speculative, by academic qualification, and all this other spiritual process. It is impossible, just simply impossible, understand Krishna as Supreme God without become pure devotee of Krishna when their eyes become smeared by love to Krishna. And this for preaching application, this is plenty information. Practically each verse, each purpose, you can find so many wonderful things, passage, which you can use for preaching to people about Krishna consciousness. That Krishna, for preaching, different, we can use this for preaching these people in general, for to defeat impersonalists, because we have that of most, we have most potent evidence that Krishna is person, that he have beautiful to armored form, and everything is emanate from this form. All this universal form, this also emanate from this two armored form of Krishna. We also can defeat people who falsely claim to be God. You can ask, please show to us your universal form. Sometimes people, they have some mystic power. So they can show some trick, you know, and somehow disbelieve these people in general. But no one can show universal form of Krishna. And this is very, very strong proof for devotee to defeat such opinion of people. And also other point that people sometimes ask to show some God. And Srila Prabhupada many times also quoted this. This so foolish, they ask, show me God. And sometimes even when we preach, sometimes people said, I can't believe unless I can see by my own eyes that this is God really exists. And we can explain to such people using this verse 48, 50, 52, 53, 54, you can explain them qualification and stipulation by which they can see God. In verse 48, it is said that they should have divine or transcendental vision. And then how they can have divine vision? Prabhupada's purpose very nice explained, he should become divine by nature, like demigods. And it is also said that devotee automatically develop all good qualification of demigods just simply by practice devotional service. Therefore, if people want to improve their qualities, they just now should take to the devotional service to Krishna. That other point is that some people can say, I do so many austerity, I do this, I give charity to temple, so many things. But we see that Krishna said, this is not way by which they can approach to me and they can come to me. In verse 53, he makes this very clear. In verse 54, this like conclusion. Then only by undividing devotion service, like Ananya Bhakti, like Mataji said, he can be understood, that Krishna can be understood and can be seen directly. This is only way to understand the mystery of Krishna. We can use very nice explanation of Srila Prabhupada in this purport, how people also who attach to different other process and pious activity can do same things only in Krishna consciousness. And then they will be have so much benefit from this. And last, on this personal application. I see, like before, in the beginning of the chapter, from 1 to 8, and just now I see again and again how Krishna is kind. And this verse 48, 49, again confirm this. You see how Krishna fulfilled all desire of Arjuna. Arjuna said, Krishna, I would like to see your universal form. Krishna, He showed to him this form. Then Krishna, Arjuna said, I would like to see your four-armed form. And again, Krishna fulfilled his desire. And then finally, Krishna, Arjuna said, no, I want to see your two-armed form. And Krishna, because you are my dear friend. Therefore, you can see this, my form. Therefore, also for preaching, just now I come to my mind, that we can also preach to people, if they have any desire which like to be fulfilled, they just now should come to Krishna, and Krishna really can fulfill everything. And we see also, for me it's very important, again, compassion of Krishna. Because he saw that Arjuna was very, very distressed by this, even that he should fight, he should just now kill his most dear people for him, this teacher, his grandfather. his religious, and Krishna, because he knows mind of everybody, especially Arjuna, and therefore he showed to him this near-self form, and he showed who should be happen in the end of this battle, that everybody, actually, all this teacher and recent will be killed, but not by Arjuna. Arjuna just really like instrument, but by potency of Krishna. Therefore, he would like to say that, don't worry, don't feel guilty, don't hesitate. This is actually, I am kill them. Just you like instrument in my hand. Therefore, don't worry. And this is very, very, actually, important things. And other things which I found very serious, that one of the reasons why Krishna, how we should be careful in our dealing with devotee, because when I was thinking about this, why this battle happened, and why Krishna was so kind to Arjuna, because he was his pure devotee. But from other hand, Bhishma and Dronacharya, they also was very great devotee of Krishna, but still Krishna was not hesitating to kill them. What is the reason? I think how we can understand from one point of view, he is very kind to his devotee, and he can protect them in any case. And from other things, he can kill just now great devotee like Bhishma and Drona and some other. And then I remember just now this story of Mahabharata. Actually, one of his reasons why this happened, because dynasty Kuru was insulted Draupadi, she was pure devotee of Krishna. And we see that Krishna actually out from affection for Draupadi, because he was only shelter for the Draupadi. He said that, yeah, when they pulled Draupadi, they opened her hair. And Krishna said that all women of dynasty of Kuru will open their hair. It means it's like sign of death. If a husband or son or somebody in family is killed, then women, this like tradition, they open their hair. And this was one of main reasons why this birth happened. And therefore, this, like for us, like for me, and I think for devotee, it's very important, this, like how serious is Vaishnava aparatha if you do for some other devotee, or even not like Vaishnava, because we see Bhishma and Dronacharya, they don't insult it directly, Draupadi, but because of they was present in this assembly and they was neglected in their duty to protect her, when she asked them, protect me, they just now keep silent, and they become like part of this sinful chain, and they got reaction. Therefore, from one side, we see like Krishna is very kind, and like at night 30, yeah, Krishna says that he can't forgive even most abominable action of devotee. He still he considered this devotee saintly. But from others said, if somebody offend his devotee, even other devotee, he become very intolerable for this devotee. He can give this reaction, and for them, and this so many, yeah. And this is some other things that Krishna and to, yeah, this is about divine vision. He actually I would like finish that in last verse 54, actually Krishna and Prabhupada, he gave to us this five point to explain actually how we can really come to Krishna. No, this is very, very important, because sometimes when we want to go to some place, we are thinking, oh, I should buy ticket. What is our ticket to go back to Godhead? And Krishna kindly to give all these things to us. No. Okay, it's more other things, but we have time over.
So on one side, I am in ecstasy to see that our girls that couldn't say anything at the beginning of this this course
can find time to fill up 40 minutes, have enough to speak about. On one side, I'm in ecstasy to see that. It means that we're starting to think seriously about Krishna conscious philosophy, and it's starting to mean something to us and we want to speak it. That is very wonderful. But unfortunately, we have to fit a lot into our classes. Already we're under strain. So I humbly ask you if we can add an extra dimension to the preparing of our classes, and that is that we discipline ourselves to think what I would say if I had 5 minutes to preach to somebody on these verses. Okay? I wanted to make one point in relation to something that Tusti said about how she found it difficult to understand how Krishna, on the one hand, he'll protect his devotee, and on the other hand, he'll kill him. You know, there are a number of angles of visions with which we could see this. One is that even more important to Krishna than the Brahman is Brahminical culture. There is a Brahminical culture. So the Brahman is dear to Krishna because he maintains and propagates that culture. So this is a very important point. We may be a first-class Brahman, but we're off on the wrong side, not maintaining the Brahminical culture. Then Krishna's not going to be inclined to help us. Another point is that this is the unique feature of Ananya Bhakti, or pure devotional service. And it's explained very beautifully in some of the purports in Prabhupada's Gita, that the pure devotee, and in the Sikshastika verse 8, that the pure devotee is unconcerned with how Krishna deals with him. He just wants to, like, his whole emotional mood is that he's so much in love with Krishna that he just wants to be, you know, used by Krishna. He wants somehow or other to have a relationship. So that even though Bhisma was dying on the battlefield with, you know, like hundreds of arrows through him, you know, the exchange was such that even when he shot Krishna and there's blood pouring from Krishna's body, it's explained by the Acharyas that Krishna felt this to be like, you know, a loving exchange with a lover. It was like the softness of a rose being thrown or something like that, you know. So it's difficult for us to understand the emotional exchanges, the ras that is here. It's just not on our plane. So, you know, like the devotee is actually unconcerned. If it pleases Krishna that he dies, then that's his greatest pleasure, is to die. This is very clearly explained. If you have a look at the last chapter of Antiyalila, on the chapter on Shikshastika, there's an explanation there of how there's a story of the Brahmani whose husband wanted to have connection with a prostitute, and how she actually went to all endeavor to earn money and everything else to pay for that activity. And it also then goes into talk about Radharani's relationship with Krishna and so many things. So if we want to gain some insight into the incredible intensity and uniqueness and inconceivable nature of these relationships between pure devotees and Krishna, we can get some glimpse of it by looking at the purports on Shikshastika and Chaitanya Charitamrita. Anything else that anybody has to say at this point in time? Yeah. I think I'll check with him and I'll let you know as soon as I've confirmed it, but I think he said 9:40. 9:40. So it's a very tight schedule. That will make for a very tight schedule in the morning. I'll check and I'll let you know. Yeah. For Duryodhana. For Yudhisthira. Yeah. And also you get some incredible insights in the Mahabharata into the incredible culture that was followed, you know, like when it's a really sweet pastime, where you know, here's Bhisma full of arrows, you know. So it really shows the difference between those who are living Dharma for sense gratification and those who are living Dharma for Krishna and for the culture of Krishna consciousness. So he's you know, this Mahajan's there full of arrows, and Dronacharya thinks, oh, he must be suffering so much, you know. He's a sense enjoyer. So he runs and tries to offer him a pillow.
You know, he tries to put a pillow under his head. And, you know, like, Bhishma, what? I don't want a pillow. I'm a Kshatriya. You know, and then Arjun, because he's of the same nature, he's also a devotee of this kind of caliber. So he shoots some extra arrows so that Bhishma can rest his head on a pillow of arrows. You know? So it's just inconceivable. I mean, how can we enter into this kind of, you know, this kind of world? I mean, we hope to, but I would suggest we have some ways to go. This incredible relationship and bhav that is there. It's inconceivable. But anyway, today Krishna has given us the key, and Prabhupada has given us the purports to, make sure that we use the key correctly. So if we... I would like to have done a workshop today on these verses. I may even see how it goes for tomorrow. Maybe we'll do it tomorrow, because I think it would be very rewarding to look a little bit more deeply at these verses in terms of personal application. I'll have to have a look at tomorrow's verses. Okay, anything else? Great.
Please accept my advice.